Chapter 21. Would not lay that poor girl's head on the scaffold, or mine, your dear brothers. You will not let us die, Mary, you will not, for a small sacrifice, bring your poor old father into danger? Mary made no answer. Perhaps, she said, there is time for escape. He is to be here, but in 2 hours. In 2 hours we may be safe, in concealment, or on the frontier. And she rushed to the door of the chamber, as if she would have instantly made the attempt. Two gendarmes were at the door. "Ye have orders, mademoiselle," they said, "to allow no one to leave this apartment until the return of the citizen Schneider." Alas, all hope of escape was impossible. Mary became quite silent for a while. She would not speak to Uncle Jacob, and, in reply to her father's eager questions, she only replied, coldly, that she would answer Schneider when he arrived. The two dreadful hours passed away only too quickly, and, punctual to his appointment, the ex-monk appeared. Directly he entered, Mary advanced to him, and said, calmly, "Sir, I could not deceive you if I said that I freely accepted the offer which you have made me. I will be your wife, but I tell you that I love another, and that it is only to save the lives of those two old men that I yield my person up to you." Schneider bowed, and said, "It is bravely spoken. I like your candor, your beauty. As for the love, excuse me for saying, that is a matter of total indifference. I have no doubt, however, that it will come, as soon as your feelings in favor of the young gentleman, your cousin, have lost their present fervor. That engaging young man has, at present, another mistress glory. He occupies, I believe, the distinguished post of corporal in a regiment which is about to march to Perpignan, I believe." It was, in fact, Monsieur Schneider's polite intention to banish me as far as possible from the place of my birth, and he had, accordingly, selected the Spanish frontier as the spot where I was to display my future military talents. Mary gave no answer to this sneer. She seemed perfectly resigned and calm. She only said, "I must make, however, some conditions regarding our proposed marriage, which a gentleman of Monsieur Schneider's gallantry cannot refuse." "Pray command me," replied the husband-elect. "Air lady, you know I am your slave. You occupy a distinguished political rank, citizen representative," said she, "and we in our village are likewise known and beloved. I should be ashamed, I confess, to wed you here, for our people would wonder at the sudden marriage, and imply that it was only by compulsion that I gave you my hand. Let us, then, perform this ceremony at Strasbourg, before the public authorities of the city, with the state and solemnity which befits the marriage of one of the chief men of the Republic." "Be it so, madam," he answered, and gallantly proceeded to embrace his bride. Mary did not shrink from this ruffian's kiss, nor did she reply when poor old Jacob, who sat sobbing in a corner, burst out and said, "Oh Mary, Mary, I did not think this of thee." "Silence, brother," hastily said Edward. "My good son-in-law will pardon your ill humor. I believe Uncle Edward in his heart was pleased at the notion of the marriage. He only cared for money and rank, and was little scrupulous as to the means of obtaining them. The matter then was finally arranged, and presently, after Schneider had transacted the affairs which brought him into that part of the country, the happy bridal party set forward for Strasbourg. Uncles Jacob and Edward occupied the back seat of the old family carriage, and the young bride and bridegroom, he was nearly Jacob's age, were seated majestically in front. Mary has often since talked to me of this dreadful journey. She said she wondered at the scrupulous politeness of Schneider during the route, nay, that at another period she could have listened to and admired the singular talent of this man, his great learning, his fancy, and wit. But her mind was bent upon other things, and the poor girl firmly thought that her last day was come. In the meantime, by a blessed chance, I had not ridden 3 leagues from Strasbourg, When the officer of a passing troop of a cavalry regiment, looking at the beast on which I was mounted, was pleased to take a fancy to it, and ordered me, in an authoritative tone, to descend, and to give up my steed for the benefit of the Republic. I represented to him, in vain, that I was a soldier, like himself, and the bearer of dispatches to Paris.
"Fool,"
he said, "do you think they would send dispatches by a man who can ride at best but 10 leagues a day?" And the honest soldier was so wroth at my supposed duplicity, that he not only confiscated my horse, but my saddle, and the little portmanteau which contained the chief part of my worldly goods and treasure. I had nothing for it but to dismount, and take my way on foot back again to Strasbourg. I arrived there in the evening, determining the next morning, to make my case known to the citizen Saint Just. And though I made my entry without a sou, I don't know what secret exultation I felt at again being able to return. The antechamber of such a great man as Saint Just was, in those days, too crowded for an unprotected boy, to obtain an early audience. 2 days passed, before I could obtain a sight of the friend of Robespierre. On the third day, as I was still waiting for the interview, I heard a great bustle in the courtyard of the house, and looked out with many others at the spectacle. A number of men and women, singing epithalamiums, and dressed in some absurd imitation of Roman costume, a troop of soldiers and gendarmerie, and an immense crowd of the badauds of Strasbourg, were surrounding a carriage which then entered the court of the mayoralty. In this carriage, great God, I saw my dear Mary, and Schneider by her side. The truth instantly came upon me. The reason for Schneider's keen inquiries and my abrupt dismissal, but I could not believe that Mary was false to me. I had only to look in her face, white and rigid as marble, to see that this proposed marriage was not with her consent. I fell back in the crowd as the procession entered the great room in which I was, and hid my face in my hands. I could not look upon her as the wife of another, upon her so long loved and truly the saint of my childhood, the pride and hope of my youth, torn from me forever, and delivered over to the unholy arms of the murderer who stood before me. The door of Saint Just's private apartment opened, and he took his seat at the table of mayoralty just as Schneider and his cortege arrived before it. Schneider then said that he came in before the authorities of the Republic to espouse the citoyen Marie Ansel. "Is she a minor?" asked Saint Just. "She is a minor, but her father is here to give her away." "I am here," said Uncle Edward, coming eagerly forward and bowing. "Edward Ansel, so please you, citizen representative. The worthy citizen Schneider has done me the honor of marrying into my family." "But my father has not told you the terms of the marriage," said Mary, interrupting him, in a loud, clear voice. Here Schneider seized her hand, and endeavored to prevent her from speaking. Her father turned pale, and cried, "Stop, Mary, stop! For heaven's sake, remember your poor old father's danger." "Sir, may I speak?" "Let the young woman speak," said Saint Just, "if she have a desire to talk." He did not suspect what would be the purport of her story. "Sir," she said, "2 days since the citizen Schneider entered for the first time our house, and you will fancy that it must be a love of very sudden growth which has brought either him or me before you today. He had heard from a person who is now unhappily not present, of my name, and of the wealth which my family was said to possess, and hence arose this mad design concerning me. He came into our village with supreme power, an executioner at his heels, and the soldiery and authorities of the district entirely under his orders. He threatened my father with death if he refused to give up his daughter. And I, who knew that there was no chance of escape, except here before you, consented to become his wife. My father I know to be innocent, for all his transactions with the state have passed through my hands. Citizen representative, I demand to be freed from this marriage. and I charge Schneider as a traitor to the Republic, as a man who would have murdered an innocent citizen for the sake of private gain. During the delivery of this little speech, Uncle Jacob had been sobbing and panting like a broken winded horse, and when Mary had done, he rushed up to her and kissed her, and held her tight in his arms. "Leslie, my child," he cried, "for having had the courage to speak the truth, and shame thy old father and me, who dared not say a word." "The girl amazes me," said Schneider, with a look of astonishment. "I never saw her, it is true, till yesterday, but I used no force. Her father gave her to me with his free consent, and she yielded as gladly. Speak, Edward Ansell, was it not so?" "It was, indeed, by my free consent," said Edward, trembling. "For shame, brother," cried old Jacob. "It was by Edward's free consent and my niece's, but the guillotine was in the courtyard. Question Schneider's famulus, the man Gregor, him who reads the sorrows of Werder." Gregor stepped forward, and looked hesitatingly at Schneider, as he said, "I know not what took place within doors, but I was ordered to put up the scaffold without, and I was told to get soldiers, and let no one leave the house." "Citizen Saint Just," cried Schneider, "you will not allow the testimony of a ruffian like this, of a foolish girl, and a mad ex-priest, to weigh against the word of one who has done such service to the Republic. It is a base conspiracy to betray me. The whole family is known to favor the interest of the emigres. And therefore you would marry a member of the family, and allow the others to escape. You must make a better defense, Citizen Schneider," said Saint Just, sternly. "Here I came forward, and said that, 3 days since, I had received an order to quit Strasbourg for Paris immediately after a conversation with Schneider, in which I had asked him his aid in promoting my marriage with my cousin, Mary Ansell, that he had heard from me full accounts regarding her father's wealth, and that he had abruptly caused my dismissal, in order to carry on his scheme against her. You are in the uniform of a regiment of this town. Who sent you from it?" said Saint Just. "I produced the order, signed by himself, and the dispatches which Schneider had sent me. The signature is mine, but the dispatches did not come from my office. Can you prove in any way your conversation with Schneider?" "Why," said my sentimental friend Gregor, "for the matter of that, I can answer that the lad was always talking about this young woman. He told me the whole story himself, and many a good laugh I had with Citizen Schneider as we talked about it." "The charge against Edward Ansell must be examined into," said Saint Just. "He marriage cannot take place. But if I had ratified it, Mary Ansell, what then would have been your course?" Mary felt for a moment in her bosom, and said, "He would have died tonight. I would have stabbed him with this dagger." Asterisk, asterisk, asterisk this reply, and, indeed, the whole of the story is historical. An account, by Charles Nodier, in the Revue de Paris, suggested it to the writer. The rain was beating down the streets, and yet they were thronged. All the world was hastening to the marketplace, where the worthy Gregor was about to perform some of the pleasant duties of his office. On this occasion, it was not death that he was to inflict. He was only to expose a criminal who was to be sent on afterwards to Paris. Saint Just had ordered that Schneider should stand for 6 hours in the public place of Strasbourg, and then be sent on to the capital, to be dealt with as the authorities might think fit. The people followed with execrations the villain to his place of punishment, and Gregor grinned as he fixed up to the post the man whose orders he had obeyed so often, who had delivered over to disgrace and punishment so many who merited it not. Schneider was left for several hours exposed to the mockery and insults of the mob. He was then, according to his sentence, marched on to Paris, where it is probable that he would have escaped death, but for his own fault. He was left for some time in prison, quite unnoticed, perhaps forgotten. Day by day fresh victims were carried to the scaffold, and yet the Alsatian Tribune remained alive, At last, by the mediation of one of his friends, a long petition was presented to Robespierre, stating his services and his innocence, and demanding his freedom. The reply to this was an order for his instant execution. The wretch died in the last days of Robespierre's reign. His comrade, Saint Just, followed him, as you know, but Edward Ansel had been released before this, for the action of my brave Mary had created a strong feeling in his favor. And Mary? Said I. Here a stout and smiling old lady entered the captain's little room. She was leaning on the arm of a military-looking man of some 40 years, and followed by a number of noisy, rosy children. This is Mary Ansel, said the captain, and I am Captain Pierre, and yonder is the colonel, my son, and you see us here assembled in force, for it is the fate of little Jacob yonder, whose brothers and sisters have all come from their schools, to dance at his birthday. Beatrice Merger. Beatrice Merger, whose name might figure at the head of one of Mr. Colburn's politest romances, so smooth and aristocratic does it sound, as no heroine, except of her own simple history. She is not a fashionable French countess, nor even a victim of the revolution. She is a stout, sturdy girl of 22, with a face beaming with good nature, and marked dreadfully by smallpox, and a pair of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.